I'm Dan Nicasso with the Honolulu Advertiser, and we're sitting with Kent Corsi, the new executive director of the Hawaii branch of the International Dyslexia Association, and we're in their headquarters in Makiki on the top of Kamoku Drive. Good morning, Kent.
Good morning.
Thank you for sitting with us.
I'm happy to be here.
Now, I asked you about your name.
Yes.
You prefer Kent, or do you prefer C. Kent Corsi?
I go by Kent, but my parents, when I was born, my mother named me Kent Christopher Corsi, and the initials to that are Casey Corsi, and that would, I don't know, rhyme or be whimsical. So actually, I have a name change, and it was to Christopher Kent. My grandmother wanted me to be Christopher, and my parents always called me Kent. In my freshman year of high school, I added the C to my name because of the actor A. Whitney Brown. I saw somebody else doing it, A. Whitney Brown, so I said, okay, well, I'll be C. Kent Corsi.
Did you actually change your name?
No, my name is. So on all my legal documents, I actually now do just sign C. Kent Corsi, even though it is Christopher Kent. And it's very rare that people actually ask me to sign Christopher. And so it's just stuck.
And you were born 36 years ago.
I'm 36.
Yes. Did you say you have a birthday coming up?
No, my wife just turned 37, and my birthday's in March.
Uh-huh. Okay. And your title is executive director.
I'm the executive director.
And you're the new executive
director.
First. And new.
Haida didn't have an executive director until I started about a month ago. They were... there's a board of directors. Mm-hmm. There's 15 of them, and 15, 16 of them, and they're all volunteers in the community for various reasons involved with dyslexia. They either have it, their children have it. We have some folks on our board that are just community volunteers, mm-hmm. as the nonprofit sector is. People are interested in a mission, and so this is a mission that some folks are interested in and that serve on the board. But most of them have a connection to dyslexia, and their time is taxed, and so they wanted to have more staff, and so they hired me.
And what are your main duties?
So it's startup for me as to determine what exactly we're going to be doing. But I'm going to lead the organization in developing new programs, mm-hmm. to provide more services to people who have dyslexia. That we have discussed things along the lines as being able to provide more testing for folks with dyslexia. You have to be tested to really have a diagnosis of dyslexia, and testing is very expensive. It can be $500 to $600. The DOE does perform it. Mm-hmm. It is something through the No Child Left Behind that the DOE will do in the public schools, and even children in private schools can get tested through the DOE. That becomes cumbersome. You have to go into the DOE scheduling. The DOE is an overtaxed organization, mm-hmm. and so any help that we can provide the DOE for our specific group of people, those are children with dyslexia, I think that's a good thing.
So even though a child is perhaps a candidate to be tested, mm-hmm. and the DOE is required to provide that testing, mm-hmm. it might not happen quite that efficiently or faster.
Yeah, yeah. Not to say anything about the DOE.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
They're a large organization.
They're a very large organization, yeah. And we work very well with them. But there are lots of kids in school who have lots of different disabilities. Some that are seen, some that are unseen, and our one niche is people with dyslexia. Mm-hmm. We also work with adults with dyslexia, so that has nothing to do with the DOE. Those folks, can't get tested through the DOE.
Okay. Well, we have many, many questions about dyslexia and the organization.
Okay.
And let me follow up one question, though.
Yes.
So the one of your jobs is, mm-hmm. is to sort of decide on what, as the executive director, is to decide what more things need to be done.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Is there anything else besides testing?
Sure. We have an Odyssey project that we will actually pay for tutoring for disadvantaged children who have dyslexia. So to oversight of that, to expand that program, and So we get funded through many of the local foundations provide funding for that. We have an annual fundraiser. October is Dyslexia Awareness Month, and so there's this big fundraiser that we do every year to raise money for that, for the children. Everything is always for the children. Mm-hmm. But in essence, yeah. Yes.
And is one of your roles also to just raise awareness of the organization and have parents or adults realize that this organization is out there? And
yes. So I will start to be more. We've had staff here in the office for, I think, about 9 years, and it's just been an office manager to, not just, I mean, the office manager runs this program, but doesn't really go out.
Right.
So people call here, they find out about things. We disseminate information. Part of the mission, part of the goal and the mission of the organization is advocacy within the community and to make dyslexia awareness. And so we do that. And so I will oversee all of those aspects of the organization.
Yeah, great. And where were you born?
I was born in New London, Connecticut.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What was your family doing there?
My father, as many Haole people who made it to Hawaii, was in the Navy. And he served on an aircraft carrier that moved us to Hawaii when I was 5.
Ah.
And then he worked at Pearl Harbor on submarines. And he retired in 86, and my mom never wanted to move again, and so I've lived in Hawaii. There has been some time where I was in the mainland during that time, but I have always considered Hawaii my home since I was about 5.
Mm-hmm. And what high school did you graduate from?
I'm a very, very proud graduate of James B. Castle High School in Kaneohe. I love Castle High School.
What year did you grad?
1988.
And college?
I went to Liberty Community College, and we can. When you ask me about my dyslexia, I can tell you why I went to Leeward.
Mm-hmm.
I have an associate's from Leeward. I have 2 bachelors.
An AA from Leeward.
Uh-huh.
What year was
an
that?
Associate's of Arts.
Now
that I don't. 1992.
Okay.
I think. Yeah, I think either got my AA in the fall. In the fall of 1991 or the fall of 92. I can't remember. And I have 2 bachelor's degrees from Manoa, and I graduated in 96 from Manoa with a bachelor's in psychology and a bachelor's in art.
Is that a B.S.?
B.A.
B.A. in both?
B.A. in art and a B.A. in psychology. I primarily focused on ceramics when I was getting my art degree, and so that's what I did. But I didn't get a B.F.A., which is a Bachelor of Fine Arts. That would have required a little more schooling. My master's is in nonprofit management, so I have an M.N.M., from Regis University, which is in Colorado.
Okay, one more time. Master's in
nonprofit management, an MNM.
What is that? NM, MN.
And master's nonprofit management.
MNM. Oh, I see.
Regis, like as in Regis Philbin.
Huh?
He is our client. He has nothing to do with the school.
Regis.
R-E-G-I-S University.
And where's that?
Denver, Colorado. My wife was 2001.
Okay.
My wife was at Denver University, and so I ended up there, and I had gotten involved in the nonprofit sector, and so I got a degree.
Mm-hmm.
It is a business degree for the nonprofit sector, so it's like an MBA, but this is just focuses on nonprofit.
Gotcha. What was the plan? You had dual degrees in 96.
Yes.
In art and psychology.
Yes.
What was the thinking there?
It was really... Psychology is an easy degree to get. A bachelor's in psychology is an easy degree to get for folks who have difficulty with school.
Really?
And, yeah.
Why is that?
Well, it's not a hard science. There's not a lot of math. So people can read that or hear that and say, oh, well, he doesn't know what he's talking about. But I was able to go through the psychology program and was able to, read about therapists and, famous people and, and all that kind of stuff. And I was able to just absorb that information and then regurgitate it in whatever way that it needed to be, via exams or what. And so, I was in college because I wanted to be in college, desperately wanted to be there, and psychology just fit. My older sister had gone to UH and was working on her psychology degree. My other sister, actually, I think my sister Dale has a psychology degree as well. And so I just did that. Art,
yes.
Though, my friend Ransley, Duhai Lansad. He was a BFA in photography, and so I was taking ceramic classes. I would always take one ceramic class while I was getting my art degree. And my friend Ransley was a BFA, and he said, you know, why don't you do this? And so I stayed in school an extra year and a half and got my ceramics degree.
But there was no plan to connect the two in any...
Yeah, everyone else always says you can do art therapy. I had no dreams or desires of getting a master's in psychology. I knew I couldn't do that. I knew that would be too difficult for me, as a dyslexic, would be just too hard. And then the thought of doing thesis work and PhD work on the lines of psychology, you know, because, well, everyone's in undergraduate school, they're all worrying about the next step, and I was just wanting to just complete it.
And do what then?
And I have no plans.
No.
I was in love with my girlfriend, and who is my wife, and that was my plan. And she was living in...
It's nice to have a plan.
She went to IA High School, poor her, but that's where she went. And she was in the mainland. Most of the time we dated, she was in the mainland. And so I was going through college, really enjoying ceramics, enjoying psychology, and then graduated. And then I graduated, graduations in May, and in June I was in the mainland.
Well... Can we talk a little bit about your schooling and dyslexia?
Mm-hmm.
When, first of all, is diagnosis the
mm-hmm.
right
yep.
term? When were you diagnosed?
I was diagnosed with dyslexia in the 7th grade. I had a teacher
on
who noticed it. Yes. So, let's see. During the time that we lived here, my dad took a position at the Pentagon. And so we moved for about a year and a half, and I happened to be in the mainland at that time when I got diagnosed. So we went. So my 7th and 8th grade years were spent in Washington, D.C.
Before that, you were here.
I was here. All of elementary school was here.
And how was... Where was elementary school?
Aikahi.
And how was your schooling then?
So I remember having great challenges as a child, and my mom was always struggling with me to read and not thinking that I wanted to do it, and I remember wanting to but not being able to read very well. And my last name has four vowel sounds in it, and so there's an O, an E, an A, and a Y, and I couldn't spell my last name for the longest time, and I would get in trouble for that. And so,
and one boy and two girls?
Two boys, two girls.
Oh, okay.
They're all older than me. We're all 4 years apart.
Oh, okay.
So my oldest sister, Kim, and my older sister, Dale, live in Kailua, and my brother lives in Laguna Niguel in California.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And,
Orange County.
Yep, Orange County. I did some
time in Laguna Beach.
Well, whenever I'm whenever I'm at in that area, I think of the program OC, and I'm all, well, that's this life, when you're driving around Orange County.
It wasn't my life when I lived there,
well,
but anyway. But anyway, so
and my brother.
My point was, I was wondering if you had two girls and you were the only boy, because sometimes parents look at girls one way and
yes.
boys must be.
Well, my brother probably is dyslexic, and my father probably is as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, probably. They've never been tested, but my father never made it through high school. My brother hardly made it through high school, and then I. So you can see when dyslexia, and it became really apparent in the educational system, you can track my family. You know, my dad is.
Well, can we back up two more steps?
Sure.
What is dyslexia?
So dyslexia is a neurological condition. So it happens within the brain. It's not a disease. It's not a disease. You cannot catch it, and you cannot cure it. And so there's a lot of thoughts around. At some point. When a child is in vitro, when they're in the womb, that something within their brain doesn't quite click the way it does with most of the population. And so there's a clumping of cells or a clumping of I am not a neurophysician, and the folks who diagnose dyslexia and the folks who research, they do brain scans.
Mm-hmm.
People with dyslexia who have died, they will mm-hmm. they will dissect their brains, and they'll find these differences in dyslexic brains as opposed to people without dyslexia.
Is it genetic? You mentioned your brother.
Yep. It's regularly genetic, so usually if someone in the family has it, somebody else in the family has it too.
And if there's males, does it tend to be passed to males?
There was, for many years, the theories were that it was a male dominated
right.
Condition, and it's not. It is Dyslexia does not discriminate against age, social background. What is that when you talk about people's wealth, social economic class or status, ethnicity.
But you mentioned your brother and your father, not your mother and your sisters.
That we know. I don't think my mother or my sisters. My sister Kim can remember phone numbers. It just amazes me. And yeah, okay. I don't think. But it's all male in my group.
In your family, yeah. So then when you were at iCahi, you said mentioned there was
very difficult.
You wanted to read, but
found it difficult. It could have been a lot of things. One, you know, if you don't know what's wrong and why you're not doing well in the classroom, and you're this little Holly boy transplanted from the mainland, you don't really know what the issue is. Are you not socially adjusting, or is school falling behind? I remember hiding in class math quizzes. I would crumple them up and hide them in my desk and pretend that, oh, I passed, I handed it in. And I hadn't, because I knew I had done everything wrong. Mm. And I didn't want to continually be embarrassed. Mm. And
what kind of effect did they have on you socially, psychologically, self-esteem-wise?
Yeah, so very low self-esteem, as I remember as a child. Mm-hmm. When I would get away from academics and I would just be playing with my friends, I think that I asked my mom, socially awkward in situations, and because you have this feeling of you're not quite adequate with everybody else, you could be stupid, you could be dumb. These are words that are used regularly to describe dyslexic, lazy, things along those lines. And so I don't remember this happy childhood. Not so much of my family environment, but you know that was stressors on my mom. You know, why aren't you doing well in school?
Well, your father's a Navy guy, and
Navy, he's not around, and
tell him to work harder.
Yeah,
down.
I mean, honestly, that's what it is.
Yeah, sure.
Tell him to work harder, and you know,
he's just not applying himself.
Yeah, you get that all the time. They're just not applying themselves. They're not paying attention in class. They're not.
Yeah.
And these are just real, real common things.
So when you were back in Washington, Virginia?
Yes.
Washington?
I was in Fairfax County, which is one of the number one school systems in the country. So I won't say anything negative about the Hawaii DOE, but I was diagnosed in the seventh grade. I was able to make it through my elementary school.
And how did that happen, though, that you were even tested or diagnosed?
I was not tested in Hawaii. So I misspelled the word much. MU... still today, MUCH is how you spell much, and I would spell it mush, MUSH, and there would be lots of little things. I today have a hard time like reading the word bad, because you've got the lowercase b and the lowercase d in there, and so I get confused between that. As a kid, I would get confused between p's and q's and six and nines. I don't anymore, but d, lowercase d and lowercase b today, if they sit alone on a page, I cannot differentiate them. But in my life, I have memorized what the word dog looks like, so I know that what the D with the bottom on it. So,
but as a seventh grader, not being able to
do that,
spell much, that was a
clear sign. And then I got tested, and then my mom was just so relieved, and I was so devastated, because then I was classified as dyslexic, and so that really did confirm that I was stupid, and that I really was, because now there's a label, and so it went the opposite way. Even though
this is in the
seventh grade,
in the 70s,
I'm 80s. I was born in 1970. So I would have been 12, early 80s.
Early 80s.
Okay.
But there was a lot of awareness of dyslexia.
Huge.
Yeah.
And so, but not in our family. And so my mom, a lot of times kids will get diagnosed there'll be denial within the family, not with my mom or my dad or anybody. No one in my family denied it.
Well, they had an answer.
Yeah. But even if they got the answer, families will deny it. Families will oh, no, they need to apply themselves.
Yeah.
What is dyslexia? And so that's really, as this organization is here, really, you know, there is nothing wrong with dyslexia.
Sure.
And
so tell me more about your experience. And so how did that change the course of your education and your self-esteem and your learning abilities? And
just that took a while for me to then become confident within myself.
Did you get put in different programs?
I was put in special ed, but not special ed to the extent that that's where I went all day long. I would have a special ed class, but a lot of times special ed teachers are not really trained to work with invisible disabilities. You think of special ed a lot of times with people who have speech impairments, hearing impairments, a physical disability, a very clear disability, Down syndrome, something that's obvious. With invisible disabilities, if you're not really trained in dyslexia or other types of learning disabilities, you don't know what to do. A lot of times, as a therapist, anyway, as a special ed teacher. So I was that. When I went to Castle High School, we told people that I was dyslexic, and I was put into all the slow classes. Well, I'm not slow. I'm very fast, and so I would start to ask the teachers, you know, when are we going to be starting writing essays and things like that? And then I got put into the fast track. So in the 80s, you had the slow track, medium track, and fast track is what they call, and then the GT track. I don't know what they do now, and I'm sure it's all very different now, and they don't do all those. But so all the kids that are in the slow track will stay in the slow track their entire educational career, which I think is devastating. So I got put into the fast track, and then I was hanging out with people that were more my peer set, people that I was, you know, more involved with. I got involved with, you know, all those things. And unless, you know, you've got the athletes who do all the athletic stuff. Even though I was a runner, I didn't do any of that. I got involved with student government and all that kind of stuff. And these are some of my lifelong friends that I still see today came out of that experience. Mm-hmm. But it was because I was able to be much more confident within who I was, and that dyslexia was not that big of a deal. I credit throughout my entire educational career, to answer one of your questions that you will answer to ask me, I credit specific teachers along the way, and my English high school teacher, who I don't ever see or have really any connection with, and I doubt she would even know that how important she was to me. She didn't really know what dyslexia was, but she knew that there was something wrong. She knew that I had a learning disability. She knew that I had dyslexia, and she might have known what dyslexia was. But she spent time with me. She would stay after school with me, and she would help me. So I was able to do well in my English classes.
But were you getting special classes for dyslexia in Castle?
At Castle.
Oh, okay.
I would also go up to the special education department up there, and it was not a renaissance, but it was becoming aware to everyone. And so I would go up to the special ed class. Sandy Lakin and Shirley McCall were up there, and I would work with them, and they would help me up there as well at Castle High School.
Is that around Felix time? Felix Kocentergy time? Was that in the...
Yes, and but I at that time that I only know that retrospect.
Yeah. And did things get better for you in terms of? So you talked about initially when you were diagnosed, it was devastating.
So I had lots of friends, and I was,
and it wasn't a secret.
Popular in high school, I didn't talk about it much. I would use it sometimes to get away with things. Oh, here's I can figure out a way to do something. It wasn't until I got to Leeward Community College. So I went to Leeward Community College. I drove from Waikahi Park to Leeward Community College before H3 was built. And
after graduation or while you were at Castle?
No. So graduated from high school.
Yeah.
That was fun. Yay. And then I went to Leeward because my mom found a learning disability specialist out there. And so I started to go there. And I went there. And that is when I credit Leeward. And actually, the university's community school, the community colleges, as a real catalyst to change people's lives. Instead of sending people directly to Manoa, I went there, and I was able to get tutoring there. The learning disability specialist on site was Lynn Douglas, and I worked with her, and she would tutor me for the 3 years that I was there, read papers, and help me with all of that stuff.
Lynn Douglas.
Lynn Douglas.
L Y N N
E.
Lynne
Douglas, Douglas. She isn't there anymore. She's now in California, but she was the learning disability specialist at LCC, and that experience at Leeward, everyone talks about small classrooms and, you know, how great the community college system is because of small classrooms and all that kind of stuff. But that for me, as somebody who was dyslexic, I don't know if I could have done English 100 in such a big setting.
Yeah.
But, you know, I did everything that was required, and I graduated from Leeward. And then I went to Manoa, and Ann Ito, I-T-O, Ann Ito, who is the head of the Kakua program at
A-N-N,
Ito, I-T-O. She is the director, and still is, the director of the Kakua program at the University of Hawaii, and that is the is one of the leading, in my mind, programs. At the time it was, for universities, for people with disabilities, all disabilities. They would work with athletes who had broken a hand and couldn't take notes in class, to people who were severely disabled, quadriplegics, and so they worked with all people with disabilities on the university campus, and my eyes opened up to the world of things that were available to me as a dyslexic. I then had note takers sitting next to me in class. I had my tests read to me, because you're dyslexics a lot of time can, and not all dyslexics, there's not one way to say, you know, these are what all dyslexics are going to be like, and this is what's going to affect all dyslexics. That's not the case. You know, everyone is different. Some people are have severe reading problems where they read everything backwards. That's what people think dyslexia is, that you just read things backwards, and that's not the case. Some folks it is, but for many folks it's not. It's just, you have a real phonological problem with reading. You have just a struggle with reading or visualizing numbers and things like that. And so I'm a high-functioning dyslexic, but still yet have all those problems that dyslexics have in that. But at Kokua, I was able to just have folks take notes for me, because I would sit in class and worry about how to spell norepinephrine. How do you spell norepinephrine? N-O-R. I couldn't even spell it today if you tried. Norepinephrine. And then so she would be discussing what norepinephrine or tryptophan, you know, tryptophan is a drug that in the chemical, it'll, you know, put you to sleep and all this kind of stuff. And I'm worrying about how to spell tryptophan, and then she's on to something else. So I had note takers take notes for me.
And you went to a function at the Kokua.
Mm-hmm.
Recently,
yesterday, they celebrated their 40th anniversary. Yesterday, I was on the phone with Annie Till, and she told me about their 40th anniversary of serving serving students with disabilities. It's just it's in the what do they call that building now? It's the Student Service Center building, but it's named after one of the queens. I think it's Queen Liliuokalani. I'm not sure.
Okay.
So anyway, I went there yesterday, and so I credit Kokua and Leeward
and the UH
and
system.
The UH system. It just, you know, and I don't know if people know that it's available or what and what, but I regularly tell people about my experience at the UH system.
We'll put a plug in for it too.
Put a plug in for the UH system. I am.
Well, it sounds like it was a big turning point in your.
I had to make the commitment to education. I made that myself. I decided that this is what I was going to do.
Why, when it had been so hard for you?
I knew that that was my only route. I was not going to be a laborer. I don't know what's under the roof of a car. I could have worked at the Gap for the rest of my life, and what would that have gotten me? I knew that there was something within me that I could do, because most dyslexics are extremely intelligent people. You know, we all talk about the famous dyslexics, Albert Einstein and Sir Isaac Newton, and those are names that are thrown around quite regularly. Mm-hmm. Nobody's a fan of Tom Cruise right now, but he's dyslexic, and so his daughter probably is too. Do we have a list of famous ones here?
Yeah, here they all are.
Artists:
Pete Rose, Babe Ruth, Nolan Ryan, Magic Johnson.
Yeah, and then those that are
John Irving.
What's his name? Caesar. I think Caesar's listed here.
Mean as in Julius Caesar?
Yeah. Or one of those guys. I should be able to rattle that off quickly.
Richard Branson.
But they go back and they're able to tell from people that are a lot smarter than me can figure out through their writings or their what, that they probably had some type of disability. Alexander Graham Bell, no, that's not who I'm thinking of.
Thomas Edison, is he, do you know what occupation it is?
It's not here, but it's one of those really famous people from a long time ago.
Pete Conrad, the athlete. I mean, the astronaut.
Yeah. So you'll see that
Wolfgang Mozart.
Dyslexia has nothing to do with your success in life. It just is a different way of learning. Greg Louganis is very famous, and he talks about it regularly. And look, you know, I don't know how many gold medals he's got, but he's got quite a few.
His success was in something that wasn't.
You find your strength.
Academic, yeah.
And my strength has, I guess, turned out to be the nonprofit sector. I have found that was my calling. I didn't know that when I was at UH. But you know,
it's not something you think about in high school either.
But my friends were in school, and I mean that's just what you did. And all my friends went to college, and I wanted to go to college with them. And I didn't have any other options really. What was I going to do?
Yeah.
And you know, I got to stay at home, and my mom and my dad were fine with all of that. And I was the last of the four children, and I didn't require much of them. And so that's what I did, and then I just then really realized that with these accommodations I could do this.
Right. Okay.
And I went all the way.
Okay. So your breakthrough job.
Yes.
And this could be anything from mowing lawns to an actual professional. But what we're really looking for is something where you learn a lesson, or mm-hmm. you learn something about leadership or management or how to run an organization, or God, I'll never do it that way.
When I was, I think, 20, I was a gopher for the law firm of Sterling and Kleintop, and they're still in business, mm-hmm. Tom Sterling and Chuck Kleintop. And I don't have anything to do with them today. Sometimes I see Tom Sterling's name around. He does some social justice activities. I'm thinking about having Tom write my will and that kind of stuff. But their law firm was in Pioneer Plaza, and these were these very professional. You know, it was a law firm of attorneys, very professional. Everyone was, high powered, and
you were a clerk.
I was this little teeny gopher, and I would come. And I was a little clerk, and I would get the mail, and I would disseminate it, and I would run around downtown. That's how I learned my way around downtown, is because you would deliver all this. This is well before email. This is well before depositions
and
all these documents could be just electronically sped around. You would go to court every day and file everything. Nobody does that anymore. Everything's filed electronically. And so you'd stand in the line at the clerk's office at the filing station, whatever that's called. Mm-hmm. You would get to go in judges' chambers. I don't know, because of all security today, if even that stuff's even possible. And then I'd go in the office. Well, the Tom and Chuck, which is what they wanted to be called, they didn't want to be called Mr. Sterling or Mr. Kleintop, were these big time family law attorneys, but were so casual in their work environment.
They would let the gopher call them.
That's what everyone was referred to by their first name in their office.
Huh.
Everyone. Chuck Kleintop's son was playing in a baseball tournament, and they went to the mainland and did all of this,
like a little league kind of
little league national little league tournament, and they were winning. And so it was my suggestion that we close the whole office down and we go to their last game here in Hawaii. It was over by somewhere in Waimanalo, and so we did. We spent the afternoon. The whole law firm. These are people that at 19 and 20, I had no idea what a billable hour was and what that meant. And so they were, you know, they would lose money, but the firm would go off and do these things. And we would have birthday parties and all this kind of stuff. And it was just what I learned from them and didn't obviously know.
It was that casual kind of
this casual attire. Everyone wore aloha wear. I would wear jeans. And I'm just this kid. But I've taken from that you do not have to run your business in such a way that it is off-puttish or unavailable to people.
But did that add something to the business or the work environment?
I think at 19, what would I know? People had a good time, but I have no idea.
And therefore, did they work harder or loyalty?
I would assume so. I know that there are still people there. They were doing adoption law at the time, and I know of some folks that are still employed there. Oh, well, because I called to find out about doing my will, Adele, who was working part-time there, now is still there 15-some years later. She's Tom Sterling's now secretary. She wasn't at the time. But it was just this feeling of, this is a nice place to work. They gave me parking. Who at 19 gets parking?
Downtown parking.
In Pioneer Plaza.
Yeah. And how were
I never
clients.
Got invited up to lunch to go to the Pioneer Club, but
how were clients addressed or
I am sure that clients were given the most respect. I had very little interaction with clients, but they would call, and I always remember one time being on the phone with some other high-powered attorney saying, I'm not going to get off the phone until Chuck talks to me. And literally, I had this guy at my little station on my speakerphone waiting for Chuck to get off his phone, and I told Chuck's secretary, Dino, that you know, this guy's waiting, and she laughed, and finally Chuck got off the phone, and it's funny that professionals will play these games with one another. I remember that at 19. And so that is actually how I don't know if it's from them or if that's from me, but have driven my entire management style is benefits first. And I don't know if they gave good benefits, but I mean, they paid me and they paid me well for, you know, I don't know, I got like $10 an hour back then, which I thought was a lot. Is benefits first, this relaxed atmosphere, but work always needs to be done. These guys did work.
Sure.
And obviously they're still in business.
Okay, a little known fact about you. We're looking for something that maybe some of even your Castle alums would go, I didn't know that about Kent.
Oh, my Castle alums would go, well, they all know that I people find it funny that I was married to a United Methodist, that I am married to a United Methodist minister.
I've already bumped into two people, and that's the first thing they said.
Well, you know those people through that context. Okay, something along the lines.
Deborah Sharkey calling me now.
Oh, there's one of them. My Castle friends all know that about me too. I'm a huge Madonna fan.
Really?
I'm a huge...
That's a good one.
Okay. I don't talk about it much anymore.
That's good.
But when I was in high school and when I was in college, I had Madonna plastered all over my walls. And she came into B when in the 80s, when that was my generation. And I just read something that the reason new older entertainers can't get a market is because there isn't a younger crowd who's grown up with them. People who like the Rolling Stones when they're kids will pay $250 to go see the Rolling Stones today. But if somebody just as great as the Rolling Stones came along at their age, no one was going to listen to them.
Right.
So you've got that fan base that lasts forever.
Right.
And so one of my big desires in life was to see Madonna in concert, and that happened. And you know, I mean, it's silly, but
why are you a big Madonna fan?
Oh,
huge Madonna.
Gosh, why am I a big Madonna fan? I don't know.
You had a crush on her, or because?
No, I never really. Like, people ask that, you know. Oh, would you? And I said, no, I never would want to really have anything to do with Madonna. I wouldn't want to. You know, she does foundation work and all that kind of stuff, and as an entertainer, and I never liked all her sex stuff. That wasn't, I mean, I'm as left liberal as you can get, but all that sex stuff, that really wasn't my thing when she was running around nude. But, I don't know, her song, Like a Prayer, I don't know.
Can't explain it, huh?
I just really, really, really liked her. And, you know, there were other people I liked at the time, but they, you know, they have since faded in what I...
Okay. All right, a mentor. You made a reference to this person.
I have a few.
Okay.
Well, these are all through education. And my second grade teacher was Dolly Towne, Dolly Towne,
over at Aikahi?
At Aikahi Elementary. She's not the teacher who gave me problems in elementary school, but she just, I don't remember, she was in music, and she just always paid a lot of attention to me.
Mm-hmm.
In high school, it was Irene Yoshizaki, and she was my high school sophomore and senior English teacher.
Yoshizaki.
Her daughter still teaches there.
Z-A-K-I?
Yeah. I looked it up.
And she was, I'm sorry,
English for my sophomore and my senior year. And I was so excited when I got her my senior year because I knew it would be a good year. She would just stay after school with me. So these are the people so those folks didn't really know much about, you know, dyslexia and all that kind
and
of stuff.
You certainly weren't diagnosed at the time.
In high school I was, but and Mrs. Yoshizaki probably knew about it, but not in elementary school. I'm not sure, but I just remember her waiting after school for me to help me with things, and just really said that, you know, you can do this, you really can do this. and without having any real dyslexia training. She was just a teacher, and so I just really liked her. And then I talked about the folks at Leeward, Lynn Douglas, and then my master's degree, who is really truly my mentor today, is somebody that nobody in Hawaii would know. His name is David Henniger, H-E-N-N-I-N-G-E-R.
Henninger.
Henninger. He's an adjunct professor at Regis, but he's also the executive director of Bayaud Industries, B-A-Y-A-U-D. And he is the reason why I'm a nonprofit executive. And so he just opened that whole world to me. I was working as the executive director for a homeless shelter in Colorado, and I didn't know anything about the nonprofit sector, so I decided, well, if I'm going to do something with this, and this is really going to be my life, I should get some more schooling in it. And so he was the very first class I took, and I actually stayed with him throughout my my time through my graduate program, and then am still in contact with him, and he still guides me in the nonprofit sector.
So these other people, other than maybe the Leeward and the UH folks, they probably don't know that they had such an influence on you.
Nope. Probably don't.
Oh, that's nice.
They probably have no idea. I wrote Mrs. Yoshizaki a letter once. I don't even know. I tried to go to Castle once to see her. That's when I found out that her daughter now teaches there and that she's retired. And they built this entire science wing on the campus that I'd never even seen. Because I guess her daughter teaches science. And
is it named after?
I don't know who it's named after.
Well, what does her daughter teach and what is her name?
Her daughter...
That's okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know. But they told me when I went to the office, I said, does Irene Yoshizaki work here? And they said, no, but her daughter does. And it's fun to be back on campus and walk around. And nobody knows who you are.
Yeah. I mean, who's the old guy?
Yes.
And I've had that experience.
I went after school purposely so I wouldn't get in trouble. So.
Major challenge. And this could be for the organization. It could be for you personally. It could be...
Oh, okay.
It could be just something you...
That's obviously going through dyslexia was a major challenge in my young life.
What about now, though?
Today, I am still... My mother died when I was 25, and I read the column, and everybody says that, you know, that is a major challenge for them. And that's still today. I felt that I was too young to lose my mother, and she was very important to me. And so that is a personal challenge for me. You look back on some of the things in life and what are your challenges, and that continues to be a struggle for me, that my mother is not around to see this because this would make her so proud.
What was her name?
Sherry Corsi, S-H-E-R-R-I.
S-H-E-R-R-I.
It's ironic that a dyslexic is now running a dyslexic organization and has done so well in school. The challenges for Haida...
So she would have loved to...
She would have loved this. Yeah. This would have made her very happy and would have made her very proud. You know, she died right before I left UH, so she wasn't able to see me graduate from UH, and she died in February. I graduated in May, and so that was difficult for me. And here's the clincher of it all. You see, when your life comes in a full circle, Ann Ito was the keynote speaker at my graduation, the director of Kukua, and mentioned my mother in my graduation ceremony.
Why?
And because she had just died, and Ann knew. She was discussing graduates that were in the audience.
I see.
At the time, they were graduating, that she knew of their struggles, and so I will never forget that. And you know,
that was at commencement, or that was for Kokua?
That was at the university commencement. She was the keynote address speaker for the graduation that year. And she mentioned a number of people, and I don't know who else she mentioned, but I don't think she called me by name, but she mentioned my mother. And
You were mentioning the challenge for Haida.
For Haida as an organization is what's next. They hired me and to do what's next.
Right.
And so what is next for this organization? Where are we going to go? What more are we going to be able to do? And this is a discovery period for the organization. There is so much more we can do for people with dyslexia. More services that we can provide. Most people don't know that they are dyslexic.
Okay, let's get to that in a second.
Oh, okay.
And let's finish up these biographical ones. Hobbies.
Baking.
Baking.
I love to bake with my sons. They're 6 and 2. And they just love it. They pull the little step stool out. If I didn't have back problems, I might be a baker. But I can't stand all day long.
And what do you bring to parties?
What I
Nobody says, Ken, we got to have
yes,
the...
I can make an angel food cake at a drop of a hat. I could make it right now if I had 12 egg whites. But I've always been a baker, and I still, even though I work once every couple of weeks, work part-time at Williams-Sonoma, and I've worked for that company for 8 years. And I love that. So I love to bake, and that is...
Why didn't you go to KCC then?
I know, well, I didn't realize any of that at the time, that was something that I would do. And then all these hobbies have gone away since having children. I used to run, I used to go to movies. Those things are gone.
Yeah, it was a long time before I saw a movie that didn't have dancing animals in it.
You got it.
Books recently read, and is this...
So... I don't read much at all, and but I decided earlier this year that, you know, I really should, I miss reading, because all of my books were on tape in college, and everybody says, oh, just get your books on tape, you can do it in the car. I'm all, well, drive time in the car is 10 minutes, and I really can't focus, and I really prefer to read the books in front of me and listen to the tape at the same time, now CDs. Recording for the Blind is also Recording for the Blind and Learning Disabled. They changed their name years ago, and so Learning Disabled now can access all the Recordings for the Blind's books. And so, you know, like, all the books here in our library are productive. Predominantly on tape and audio cassette. But I read The Da Vinci Code. Everyone in the country was reading The Da Vinci Code. Everyone said that The Da Vinci Code is something that was easy to read, and they could read it in one sitting. Well, for me, one sitting is about a week, so it took me about a week to read The Da Vinci Code. And now I'm reading Broken Trust. Here's something that people don't know about me. I'm an aficionado of Hawaiian history and Hawaiian... the life about Hawaii and the experience and the overthrow of the monarchy, and one of my favorite classes in high school was Hawaiian history that they make you take in your sophomore year. And so I wanted to go to Kamehameha as a little kid, but you know, that wasn't going to happen. And
technically, you're supposed to be allowed to get in.
Well, I wouldn't. I'd still. That's I believe in the cause.
Right. Okay.
But there you go.
So, dyslexia.
Dyslexia.
What is the population in Hawaii? And
it's estimated that 10%, anywhere from you know, they say 5 to 15, so 10. Around 10%
just of people. In the general U.S. population.
In the general U.S. population, so that would pertain to Hawaii as well.
Right. And breakdown between adults. And you describe yourself as an adult.
I'm an adult dyslexic. Because usually when people say they're dyslexic, you immediately think that they are children. And so now I will say that I'm an adult dyslexic, so I don't know why people say that. That's just the category. Because whenever I go to conferences, I have to fill out, they want you to check if you're an educator, if you're a parent, if you're, you know, someone, and they always put adult dyslexic, and so I guess that's where, you know, from census data, you know, I mark that I'm an adult dyslexic.
And are there any estimates in Hawaii of the breakdown between, are there more adults, are there more children, is it...
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
And, does your organization, you've mentioned something about most people don't.
No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How does that phenomenon occur?
So, people think that their children or teachers think that the kids in their classes are just, you know, not applying themselves, they're just lazy, they just put them through the school system. Our prison population is absolutely full of people that have learning disabilities of some kind or another. They cannot read. So what's the issue there? So folks that don't get diagnosed and folks that don't get treatment drop out of high school. People who drop out of high school are more likely to commit crimes. People who commit crimes are more likely to end up in prison. So our prison population is full. There's a program in, I think in...
So it's an issue that affects more than
just
parents or children.
Yes. It's if you can teach people to read, people who can read are successful in life for the most part. Mm-hmm. People who cannot read are not successful in life for the most part. You know, there's extremes on either end. And so if you have struggling students in school that are held back for whatever reason because of No Child Left Behind or because of whatever, failing a test or something along those lines, and they never get services or they never get diagnosed, they never get treatment, they never get tutored, they are not going to get out of high school. Mm-hmm. They're going to drop out. And immediately, the moment you drop out of high school, the barriers that are set for the rest of your life are so high that are sometimes impossible to conquer.
Right.
You know, so I'm making dyslexia sound like, and you know, people with it who don't get services, like this is just like some the worst thing that can happen. But to some people, it really is.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. We're talking about a small percentage of the U.S. population, but it's a large enough percentage of the population that it is enough to make a significant to do something, to have an organization like HIDA, to be involved in the DOE, to be involved with teaching teachers. That's really the issue, is teaching teachers.
So from a, let's look at it from a different point of view.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a parent of a child who you possibly you think mm-hmm. there might be some dyslexia involved, or you're an adult and you've always wondered, how can they get in touch with you? What kind of resources? Do you have a website?
Where our website, which I get constantly confused, is it's HIDA.
HIDA.
Uh-huh. Dyslexia comes out in all forms, and retrieval is one of them. And
well, I've got this. Dyslexia-Hawaii.org.
That's it.
Okay, that's
www.dyslexia, DYSLEXIA-Hawaii, HAWAII.org.
And what are people going to find on that website?
So on that website, that will lead them to us here in the office. It will discuss with them how to contact us, what services that we do provide. It will talk to them about simple things on common signs of dyslexia,
mm-hmm.
Where they can go to get help, what they can do themselves. It's not a screaming website like some big organizations have, but it will guide them. It will direct them to us in the office, and then in the office, if somebody is if they suspect that they've got dyslexia,
mm-hmm.
we can refer them to testers. We ourselves don't test, but that's something that we have discussed. You know, we could do testing.
You say you steer them to testing,
mm-hmm.
and you said it costs $500 to $600.
It can.
What would a parent do to get some help with that?
Okay. So herein lies some of the challenges. If you want private testing done by a private therapist, if your HMSA pays for some of this sometimes, depending on your plan, or Kaiser, your insurance plan will cover the cost of therapy sometimes. Depends on what kind of insurance you got. If not, you will have to come up with the money. We do scholarships for tutoring. We don't do scholarships for testing. That's not to say that we won't look at that
right.
in the future.
Will you help them navigate to the DOE
yep.
system?
Yes.
To get testing?
Mm-hmm. And the DOE will test you. A lot of times, though, the DOE doesn't use dyslexia as a diagnosis, though. It's not a diagnosis that they do actually use. And so we'll help the student to tell them who to talk to at their school, have the parents then schedule testing, and then the children can get tested.
Are there other things that it's important for parents or adults to know about either social stigma or just that there's an organization mm-hmm. out there that is mm-hmm. focusing on these? I mean, some of those kind of internal.
Yes. Social stigma is pretty much, for most things nowadays, I was reading in Newsweek that, you know, sleepaway camps, which we don't have here in Hawaii, I've never been to a sleepaway camp, but, you know, the clinicians there or the nurse on site the kids would come with their medications and, you know, the hyperactivity kids or the whatever kids, and they would, all the nurses would say they're giving them vitamins, you know, because they wouldn't want anyone to know the social stigma. Well, nobody cares about that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Kids walk around today allergic to everything, allergic to grass or their ADHD, and all of the, I think, you know how in Hawaii, you know, what are you? It's better to have, you know, three different, you know, I'm Japanese, I'm Hawaiian.
Right.
And, well, I don't know, but I think that, you know, it's good to get a diagnosis. And so that stigma, you know, I'm ADHD with this and that and all that. I mean, they even made a joke about that in the Finding Nemo movie. The one of the girls was water intolerant or something. That's really common now. And so that stigma is gone away. It's when there's a diagnosis and when there are services being provided. But if you're a socially inapt child and you're off the wall, you're not going to, and you don't know, and your parents don't know, and they've never heard of dyslexia. Because, you know, Bill Cosby's Ennis, who tragically died, he was murdered,
right.
But his son was dyslexic, and actually the Cosbys made a big point of education, and
in the show, character.
You
was,
got it. Yeah. His son was dyslexic, and that came up as a continual theme. That brought a lot of attention to dyslexia around the nation. We are a large organization. We are a member organization. We here in Hawaii, we have about 150 members, but we are part of 46 chapter branches around the country. So when we say we're the international dyslexia organization, we have a chapter, I think, in Israel and one in England. And there's a national conference every year that about 3,000 to 4,000 people attend. And there, that's when new research is brought out and scientists talk about the things.
But
on a larger scale, that doesn't answer your question.
But
exactly.
But an organization that has 150 members,
yes,
which is small,
good, but small.
But that's not 10% of our population.
No.
So what does that tell us about
people who join the organization?
Obviously, don't have to necessarily have dyslexia.
But
we're talking about potential population of about 120,000.
Yes. Probably have some form of a learning disability,
right,
and probably could have dyslexia. How do we reach them all? We work regularly with the DOE.
Mm-hmm.
We have regular workshops throughout the year to train teachers. The goal, as I was saying earlier, is early intervention with teachers, and you get teachers to be able to identify children who potentially have learning disabilities. For us, we care about dyslexia. We care about all learning disabilities, but with dyslexia, and get them, steer them through the SPED, special education,
mm-hmm,
steer them in that direction so that they can get tested. Children don't have to be out of the classroom situation. Teachers can very easily do different things in their rooms, in their classrooms. It's called multisensory, and so you use all the senses. A weak reader can learn something better if it's spoken to them or talked to them. Or, you know, there's all types of things. If we can get into the university system, and obviously that, you know, with Kokua and all of that, there we're in there. But if we can get into the training of the teachers so that they can come out with an awareness of all types of disabilities, then those teachers in the school are better apt to identify children with disabilities.
Okay.
Once a child's identified with a disability and they receive the services, they're going to learn how to read, they're going to be able to receive tutoring, and then they're going to be normal functioning, high functioning adults.
But one of the things you sounds like you want to do is get more teachers involved in your resources, or
yes,
connected with the network.
The more public school and private school, just because, and this is a misnomer about Hawaii, people really do think that just because you're in private school, you're getting the best education. And that's not always the case. There are a lot of private schools, one really close to us, that for years would not, the most popular private school in Hawaii, that would not identify it as a disability. Send them to assets. You know, we don't deal with dyslexia. Send, you know, that's not something that we do. And so you can struggle in a private school in Hawaii. Not say anything about, you know,
yes,
the negativity of private schools, but people often think that there is nothing wrong once the moment they send their child to a private school.
Okay. Anything else we need to talk about with either HIDA or dyslexia?
HIDA is a great organization. I'm fortunate and benefited to be here.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Going over. Okay, we can finish.
Thanks very much for your time, Kent.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.